Ladies and gentlemen, get ready to dive deep into the shadowy world of tax crimes with your favorite true crime podcast, Tax Crime Junkies. I'm your host, here to take you on a thrilling ride as we uncover the jaw-dropping story of a Russian billionaire who's left a trail of tax crime accusations in his wake. Picture this. A larger-than-life bank magnate, Oleg Tinkoff, with a penchant for bending the rules when it comes to taxes. Just a few months ago, Tinkoff found himself in hot water, pleading guilty to none other than tax fraud. But wait, it gets even juicier. Brace yourselves for the mind-blowing fact that he agreed to cough up a staggering $500 million. And at that price, he avoided prison time. Yeah, you heard that right. That's the price he had to pay for misrepresenting his net worth on a cheeky little tax form after he conveniently renounced his U.S. citizenship back in 2013. Now, folks, this case we're unraveling today is something truly extraordinary. It's like finding a needle in a haystack, a rare example of a wealthy individual who amasses fortunes within the confines of U.S. tax laws, only to jump ship and ditch their citizenship. Why, you might ask? Well, the answer seems to lie in a familiar motive: to shield one's wealth from the ever-vigilant tax man. And trust me, it's highly plausible. So buckle up, my fellow crime enthusiasts, grab your detective hats, and let's embark on this thrilling journey into the heart of the matter. Join me as we peel back the layers, sift through the evidence, and expose the secrets of this captivating tax crime tale. Are you ready? Because Tax Crime Junkies is about to blow your mind. Welcome back. I'm your host, Dominique. I'm a CPA, certified tax strategist. I have an interest in true crimes. I have a degree in law and lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. And with me today is my oh-so-lovable co-host, Tom Gorzinski.
Hey, Dom. I'm Tom Gorzinski. I'm an enrolled agent. I've admitted to practice before the United States Tax Court as a non-attorney. I'm a tax instructor. And just like you, I have a real interest in true crime. So we decided to create a true crime podcast to combine our love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. We are the Tax Crime Junkies. For a case this high profile to just get swept under the rug without prison time is quite the eye-opening insight into how some people evade the law with ease. I'm excited to get into this one and see why he was able to avoid jail. So, Dom, what exactly happened to make him agree to pay a whopping $500 million in back taxes?
Well, it appears, after looking through the court cases and a few Forbes articles, that the billionaire listed his net worth as just $300,000 on an IRS form that allowed him to avoid an exit tax levied on high net worth expatriates. Federal prosecutors also accused him of filing a false 2013 income tax return a year later.
Wow, that's quite a serious accusation. So according to Forbes, what's his net worth?
I don't think you want to hear the answer to that question, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. Are you ready?
Yeah, just give it to me straight.
Tinkoff's net worth is estimated to be $7.7 billion by Forbes. Do you know how much $7 billion is? Think of it this way. Do you know how long a million seconds is? Take a guess. How much is a million seconds?
A million seconds? Is that like a week? 8 days?
Something? Kind of close. It's 12 days. Okay. A million seconds is 12 days. Now, do you know how much time a billion seconds is?
Oh, I mean, that's got to be at least 10 years, 9 years, something like that?
Not even close, Tom. 32 years. 32 years versus 12 days. Now think about this in money terms and then multiply that by 7.7. That's how much money this guy has. And yet he said his net worth was only $300,000. That's really a slap in the face to our country, to our tax laws, and to humanity.
You know, when you put it that way, I guess this guy is as crooked as they come when it comes to tax evasion, to be as blatant as that.
He may be crooked, but he does have an interesting backstory because he's completely self-made. Let's go back and talk about how Oleg Tinkoff made his money, who he is, and how did he get into this mess?
Sounds good. Our tale begins in the frosty streets of Russia, where young Oleg Tinkoff embarked on a path that would ultimately lead him to the pinnacle of wealth and infamy. Born with an entrepreneurial spirit and insatiable hunger for success, Tinkoff showed promise from an early age. He was raised by a miner and a seamstress. He possessed a cunning business mind and a relentless drive to conquer the financial world.
That's right. Tinkoff got his start in the world of wholesale electronics trading, starting with Singapore as his source for the inventory. And he was trying to simplify the bureaucratic process. I imagine it's got to be a nightmare to try to import things into Russia to sell. And as a result of that, he registered a limited liability partnership in St. Petersburg. Pretty soon after that, he established regional companies in different areas around Russia. So the goods would arrive in St. Petersburg and were then distributed to different regions where they were sold at a higher markup. So it's the classic business model, buy low, sell high. And his trading journey began with calculators, but gradually expanded to include office equipment, televisions, VCRs, and even artificial flowers and trees. After he had success with the retail business, Tinkoff decided to venture into establishing his own brand by shipping containers of electronics directly from Asia to Russia. So he figured out there's ways to make these products even more profitable if I cut the shipping costs down and slap my own brand on it. And he called that brand TechnoShock.
And he didn't actually become successful by selling at premium prices, did he?
He did, shockingly, offering high-end household appliances at premium prices. That was sort of his shtick. And it was a concept that surprisingly resonated with customers. So TechnoShock became one of the first companies in Russia to train and have sales consultants. I guess you'd need a sales consultant if you're selling at premium prices, right?
Right.
And so they expanded pretty rapidly. They had 8 stores by 1996, and the turnover doubled from 95 to 96, reaching an impressive $40 million in revenue.
That's such a huge growth in such a short period of time. Wasn't it just a couple of years?
So 92 to 96, so 4 years. 4 years total to reach $40 million in gross sales.
Wow. With that kind of success, I imagine an entrepreneur like Tinkoff began to think of all sorts of businesses to start. In 1996, Tinkoff also established a chain of music stores called Music Shock. The grand openings of the first and second Music Shock stores featured performances by renowned artists such as Philip Kirkorov. However, in 1998, Tinkoff sold Music Shock to Gallo Records, a Moscow-based company. Tinkoff also ventured into the world of music production by launching the Shock Records record label. The label released debut albums by bands like Kirpichi, Leningrad, and the Vladimir Dashkovich Symphony, based on Dashkovich's music for the film Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Here's a sample of the song Ecstasy by Leningrad.
Изнывало мое тело, только не решалось. Я давно уже хотела маленькую шалость. Ты Стас, космос, Стас, ты просто космос. Падаю я в экстаз, ты просто космос, Стас, ты просто космос, Стас, ты просто космос. Падаю я в экстаз, ты просто космос, Стас.
That's not bad. It sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
But be careful, Tom, because if you look that up on YouTube, the video is kind of racy.
So far, I don't see why TinkGov would even have a U.S. requirement, right? The U.S. asserts jurisdiction to tax foreign corporations only if they are engaged in business in the United States or receive income from sources within the United States. Foreign corporations that are engaged in the trade or business in the United States are subject to net basis income tax under Code Section 882 on any of their income that is effectively connected with that business. But I've never heard of these brands here in the U.S. Have you, Dominique?
Not until reading about Tinkoff. Oleg Tinkoff actually arrived in the United States, according to his autobiography. And he got here in 1993 to visit a friend in California who had a green card. He ended up buying a house up in Santa Rosa, so sort of near wine country, and set up a business that exported American goods to Russia. And then later on, he settled in San Francisco and he got U.S. citizenship back in 1996.
Ah, and that's the problem, citizenship in the U.S. Because of regardless of where you reside, if you are a U.S. citizen, you're required to file a U.S. federal tax return and pay U.S. tax on your worldwide income. The only option to avoid submitting a U.S. return and paying U.S. taxes abroad is honestly to renounce your U.S. citizenship. But Tinkoff had many more businesses to start before he tired of the U.S. tax system. He started Tinkoff Beer, Daria, a packaged foods company, restaurants, credit system, and even a professional cycling team. And the real wealth generator, Tinkoff Bank, is what skyrocketed his success.
Fun fact, the banking idea actually came from a trip that Tinkoff took to Necker Island. You know Richard Branson's private island down in the Bahamas?
Wow, I can't imagine how many billion-dollar ideas have been dreamed of on that island. We should go.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? So in 2005, Tinkoff presented a draft of his plan for a future bank in Russia, right there on Necker Island. And the idea was that he would build a bank with no branches, a complete digital bank. Now, for the sake of our younger listeners, Tom, there were things back in 2005, but digital worlds was not really one of them. At least it wasn't that common. So Tinkoff figured that if they didn't have the expense of the branches, he thought that savings from operating an entirely digital bank could be put into marketing and then make the bank much more successful.
Right.
In fact, he was inspired, and he got inspired by the U.S. Capital One direct bank model. So back at that time, Capital One actually was pretty similar in that it had very, very few branches, but it had lots and lots of customers. So he wanted to model and do something similar in Russia. And in a short time, it grew to be Russia's largest bank. And since then, it's grown into an entirely online financial system. It offers both financial and lifestyle services, and it covers just about any customer need connecting to spending.
But behind the glimmering success and opulent lifestyle lay a shadowy secret. As Tinkoff's wealth grew, so did his desire to evade U.S. tax on that wealth. In 2013, he made a decision that sent shockwaves through the world. He renounced his U.S. citizenship. This move raised eyebrows and sparked speculation. Was it a calculated attempt to shield his wealth from the U.S. tax authorities?
It sure looks that way.
It certainly does. Now let's check out the timeline, Dom. Tinkoff Credit Systems went public on the London Stock Exchange on October 25th, 2013, making Tinkoff the owner of more than $1 billion worth of the bank's shares. Just 3 days later, he renounced his U.S. citizenship.
Wait, he renounced after he went public?
He sure did. And I think he was banking on a Cayman Islands shell company to conceal his wealth.
So he knows he's going to make a lot of money, doesn't live in the U.S. anymore, and doesn't want to pay U.S. tax.
Right. But it's not that simple. You must expatriate if you want to get out from under the long arm of the IRS. Expatriation for U.S. tax purposes results from relinquishing a long-term permanent resident card or renouncing one's citizenship. However, unless certain exceptions apply, an expatriate is considered a quote-unquote covered expatriate under the tax code and could owe a substantial exit tax to the U.S. government. Once determined to be a covered expatriate, an individual is required to report their worldwide assets to the IRS, get this, as if they were sold on a mark-to-market basis on the day prior to expatriation. You then, the taxpayer, has to report and pay tax on the gain from the deemed sale. This may tempt some unwary expatriates to attempt to hide or understate their assets at the time of expatriation in order to reduce the exit tax. But the penalty regime for non-compliance with the exit tax can be truly catastrophic.
So Tinkoff tries to hide his assets, he denounces his U.S. citizenship, and he files Form 8854. He did it partly right, minus the fraud. His obligations under the law dictated that he disclose his global assets to the IRS. Remember, because he's been naturalized, so worldwide income, worldwide assets, and he has to report any gains from that deemed sale according to the mark-to-market exit tax rules, and then pay the taxes due. But he didn't. Instead of fulfilling these requirements by properly submitting the form and providing accurate information about those substantial unrealized capital gains, he chose a different path. And he significantly underestimated the value of his income and his assets so that he could mislead the authorities. And we've talked about this before, Tom. Does the IRS just hang out in the break room all day watching CNBC to decide who to go after? I mean, how did he actually get caught?
Well, in September 2019, a federal grand jury in California indicted Tinkoff on a charge of filing false tax returns while a resident of the state and described how he allegedly concealed $1 billion in assets and income in 2013. The indictment was sealed until March 2020. A massive cache of emails, financial records, and other documents for a Cayman Islands bank made public by a hacker who goes by the name of Phineas Fisher revealed that Tinkoff made use of at least one of his Cayman Islands companies in the BVI structure to set up a complex arrangement through shell companies to avoid paying taxes.
Was this all part of that Paradise Papers leak?
Well, Dominique, which one was that? I know about the Panama Papers. Is that what you mean?
It's sort of like the Panama Papers, but the Paradise Papers are a set of like 13 million confidential documents related to offshore investments. And there was a big leak to German reporters, and the documents originate from the legal firm Appleby, really big firm that helps people kind of set up these schemes where they're using shell companies. It had more than 120,000 people and companies in those documents. You know, even Queen Elizabeth And at the time, he was Prince Charles. Now he's King Charles. But they had their financial affairs exposed. It was really exciting.
Yes, that's the one. The Caymans leak and the California indictment really provide a clear glimpse into how the world's financial elite take advantage of these various offshore jurisdictions to hide their wealth. A document found in the Caymans leak also shows that the bank had handed over Tinkoff's financials and other information to, you guessed it, the U.S. Justice Department.
And boom, there's the connection. So after investigation, the truth came out and Oleg Tinkoff admitted to concealing over $1 billion in assets when he renounced. You know, they actually published the list of people who've renounced their citizenship. It's pretty interesting. According to the indictment, Tinkoff's final tax return didn't include any gain in income arising from the constructive sale of his property related to his expatriation. So no exit tax at all. And he reported that his total income was $205,317, even though Forbes estimated his net worth at that time to be $700 million in the same year. I always say, Tom, it's so much faster to grow your wealth if your taxes are next to nothing. No wonder he grew to $7 billion so fast.
Exactly. According to the Justice Department's tax division, when the value of Tinkoff's investment in his bank stock rose to over $1 billion, he quickly renounced his U.S. citizenship and then lied to the IRS to avoid paying the exit tax. And once you do that, that's when we get into fraud. That's when we get into criminal behavior. This was not a mere oversight. It wasn't a rounding error. It was billions of dollars.
And that's really the difference between fraud and mistakes. Fraud is usually fueled by greed, and greed's a dangerous emotion. So it's really disheartening to see somebody that's so brazen and public, because this is a real public figure. I mean, it was in all the papers when he denounced his citizenship. Recently, he actually denounced his Russian citizenship as well, Tom, because he does not agree with what's happening in the Ukraine. But it almost looks like he took pleasure in flaunting his wealth and kind of parading it around in the spotlight. And that's really the major difference between an error or oversight and versus fraud.
An expensive and steep punishment for the difference, too. Tax fraud is more than just a simple error in judgment. There are many different types, all with severe penalties. They can often be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, as we've seen in some of the cases we've covered on this podcast. It tends to depend on the amounts. And don't forget, fraud is often accompanied by time in Club Fed.
So if Tinkoff understated by over $1 billion.
We get the warhead and we hold the world ransom for $1 million.
That's got to be one long prison sentence as well as a hefty penalty. He was arrested in London, wasn't he?
He was, and promptly bailed out for $20 million cash while awaiting extradition to the U.S. Tinkoff was charged with two counts of tax fraud, each carrying a potential three-year prison term. But in October 2021, Tinkoff settled tax claims on the premise of paying at least $506.8 million, including $248.5 million of unpaid tax, without going to jail, according to the Department of Justice.
I mean, talk is one thing. I like to see action, though. And he didn't go to jail. Oleg Tinkoff is out and about. He's in public. He seems to be doing just fine. Despite contesting extradition on medical grounds, he was arrested in London and then immediately said he couldn't be extradited to the U.S. because he was undergoing treatment for acute myeloid leukemia and what's called graft versus host disease. But as part of his plea, Tinkoff agreed to make his expert medical reports available to the court so that he could prove his illness. And then, as you said, he agreed to pay more than $500 million in penalties.
It's clear he's avoiding prison time by any means necessary. And honestly, who could blame him? Nobody wants to go to prison. It's unfortunate he paid just a sliver, though, of his net worth to avoid jail time, especially considering the federal government imposed more stringent tax rules on wealthy expats in 2004 and 2008 after decades of attempts to crack down on affluent Americans who relinquished their U.S. citizenship to flee to low-tax countries. If an expatriate's net worth exceeds $2 million or their average income over the previous 5 years topped $171,000, again, we go to that exit tax where they have the deemed sale the day before they renounce their citizenship.
So that kind of points to why perhaps he declared such low income that same year in 2013, because it was 200 and something thousand. So we go by this average income over the previous 5 years. I imagine if his average income stayed below that threshold, he was probably thinking that got him out of the tax. While looking through the court cases, it was really interesting to see a 14-year business associate and a coworker of Tinkoff. He sent a letter, you know, really bragging about Oleg's character and praising him for all the good that he's done in business and in the community around him. It appears by the letter sent in that he was a good guy who just let greed get to him. Or this guy, Olivier Hughes, is completely bought off and was hired to send in the character letter, but you never know. It seems like Russian Billion's character is what convinced the court that he was telling the truth about his medical problems. In a preliminary statement of his court case, it states that given the court's comments at the time, it accepted Mr. Tinkoff's plea. We do not belabor Mr. Tinkoff's devastating medical condition, nor do we address the myriad reasons why the agreed-upon sentence is appropriate under the circumstance of this case. Rather, given the government's discussion of the factors set forth, we write solely to give the court a great appreciation of Mr. Tinkoff's impressive personal history. So this line is key here, Tom. Nor do we address the myriad reasons why the agreed upon sentence is appropriate under circumstance of this case. Who else do you know that skirts over $200 million tax and gets no prison time?
Right. I mean, it seems like the court was a big fan of Mr. Tinkoff committing over $200 million to establish a registry of bone marrow donors, raise the needed medical infrastructure, and further the education of medical personnel. He came off as a charitable guy after his diagnosis with AML.
Indeed. And reading through the transcript of his court case, Oleg's lawyer did an outstanding job of painting a picture of a man who committed a crime, but his character isn't a reflection of that by any means. Here's what he said to the court. For most people, fighting acute myeloid leukemia would be the greatest challenge of a lifetime and more than many could handle. But as this court is aware, since February of 2020, Oleg has been facing the charges in this case. And as this court certainly knows, in any circumstances, confronting an indictment is an extremely difficult and stressful challenge. Indeed, short of a terminal illness, it is one of the most harrowing and stressful experiences that a person could face. I'll say. Mr. Tinkoff, of course, faced both of these life-altering challenges simultaneously, and frankly, it's nothing short of a miracle that he is sitting before the court here today awaiting your honor's judgment. The man that I've gotten to know over the past 18 months or so is perhaps counterintuitively one of the most optimistic people that I have ever met. Throughout his entire horrific period, there has always been a vibrant light of hope that has emanated from Oleg. I think that it's very likely the result of the daily conversation that he has with his own mortality that makes him appreciate every day and every moment. To find joy in life's simple pleasures and the quiet time with his loving and supportive family, which is lovingly reflected in the letters before the court. Well, thank goodness he paid $20 million in bail so he could be hanging out with his family. Following the plea a few weeks ago, Oleg and I took a walk in the park in London, and I asked him how he felt now that he was nearing this resolution. And he said something to me I'll never forget. He said that he feels like a bird in a cage who is afraid to fly out even though the door has been opened. And as I reflected on that rather poetic simile, it is apparent to me that in part it is due to the fact that he's been living in a cage within a cage. And while the door from this case may soon be open, the door to freedom from his cancer is still years away.
And Dom, that's how and why lawyers get paid the big bucks.
I know. We got some To Kill a Mockingbird speeches in there. Well, I don't know about you, Tom, but in researching this case, I learned a lot about expatriation.
Absolutely. Remember, if you're a U.S. citizen, you must file your return and pay taxes on your worldwide income. This is often a misconception that people have if they leave the U.S.
It really is. I often hear from clients how excited they are to move abroad, only to have their ideas dashed when I inform them that they're still going to have to pay U.S. tax.
That's right. It's an important privilege of being an American citizen and enjoying the freedoms our country offers. But there is a price to pay, and the exit tax is the only way out of that price.
In recent developments, the U.S. Treasury Inspector General for the Tax Administration made a crucial recommendation to the IRS. Sometimes the IRS takes them and sometimes they ignore them. But this suggestion proposes an establishment of a comprehensive system to gather information on all expats, and then they can use the data to pinpoint expatriate tax returns with the highest compliance risk so that they can focus their examinations and audits, you know, on cases that are likely to result in a recovery for the government. And in light of this recommendation, it's become increasingly vital for U.S. taxpayers that are either expatriated now or considering expatriation to really engage in careful planning and coordination with mobility and tax advisors right from the outset. And what I like to tell people, Tom, is while we can tend to the U.S. side of the equation, you also need an expert in the country that you're relocating to so that you've got a sound approach. That's what's ultimately going to ensure a smooth and compliant process for either renouncing your citizenship or obtaining a residence permit, you know, all the stuff that you have to do to navigate the intricacies of a tax expatriation or even just living abroad and paying tax continually in the U.S. Now more than ever, expatriating individuals really need to take the necessary steps to stay well-informed and seek expert guidance to ensure that there's a seamless transition while fulfilling their tax obligations. And Oleg Tinkoff certainly could afford the experts. Do you think that his experts were in on it with him in trying to conceal his wealth and they were just ill-advised? Or do you think he took things into his own hands?
I cannot imagine any reputable tax firm or tax professional would knowingly so dramatically misrepresent the information on the exit tax form. He had to have taken it upon himself. I just can't imagine that. I also would find it difficult that any professional who was hired to do that type of work, knowing Tinkoff's vast wealth, I mean, I'm assuming they would know that if he was a client, they would quickly realize that the numbers on the form just did not comport with common sense of what his actual net worth was. So I have to assume that he did this on his own.
I don't understand anything about how Russia works or how Russian tax certainly works, but perhaps it's a situation where he did something that he regularly does in Russia that's acceptable and thought that it would work here as well. Who knows?
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Take what you learned today and use the truths that hit home to transform the way you do business. Dominique and I are super grateful you decided to join us today, and we hope you consider subscribing to the show and even sharing it with some friends who could use a tax crime junkie podcast in their life. Help us spread the word and come back for more.
And before we go, we encourage you to catch up on some of the episodes you've missed in the past. We have quite a few now under our belt, and I've really enjoyed the process. What about you, Tom?
It's been great. We've learned a lot. We've talked about some real nefarious characters, and I can't wait for more.
I agree. And Tom and I couldn't be more appreciative of your time and support. So thank you for being a fan.